Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's The Move Update Technical Conference webinar. My name is Said, and I'll be your event specialist for today. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. Please note that today's webcast is being recorded. This webcast will be available for replay on the USPS.com website after the conclusion of today's conference. We'll have a question and answer session throughout today's presentation. You may submit your questions via the Q&A panel located on the right-hand side of your screen at any time during today's presentation. Type your question in the open area and click Send to submit. We'll also be taking questions via the phone line, and instructions on how to do so will be given at the appropriate time. If you experience any technical difficulties during today's conference, please use the chat box on the right side of your screen to speak with me directly. You can also press star then zero on your telephone keypad to be connected with an operator. Representing the United States Postal Service on this technical conference will be Mr. David Rubin, Acting Chief Counsel, Law Department, Mr. Jorge Diaz, Pricing Economist, Finance, Mr. Drew Mitchum, Pricing Economist, Finance. We're also joined by several Postal Regulatory Commission staff who requested to attend in person. Mr. Rubin, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Welcome to this technical conference via webinar in docket number R-2017-7. On June 30th, the Postal Service filed a notice of price adjustment affecting three market-dominant classes of mail: first-class mail, USPS marketing mail, and special services. The Postal Service proposes pricing and classification changes for a new method of move update verification for first-class mail and USPS marketing mail. This increases the move update assessment charge from 7 cents to 8 cents, and we're also proposing to extend full-service address correction service, which is presently provided at no fee to qualifying non-full-service mail pieces submitted by mailers that prepare 95% of their volume as full-service. Similar to most commission-hosted technical conferences, the material presented is off the record. We have been assured by the commission that only on-the-record material will be considered in the commission's final order. Following the webinar, participants may, by motion, request that the commission ask formal questions of the Postal Service. There are some limits on the questions we'll be responding to during this technical conference. The limits are identical to the ones employed by the Commission in previous technical conferences. Questions should be related to understanding the Postal Service's calculations in the work papers. Questions relating to alternative approaches into policy and legal issues are outside the scope of this technical conference. As the Commission stated in the docket number R-2017-1 technical conference, the general rule is that everyone focus on how and what questions instead of the why questions. Accordingly, our goal today is to help everyone follow our price cap calculation spreadsheets. Our analysts are prepared to answer questions about the flow of their work papers and how they work. We'll begin with a presentation by Jorge Diaz, who will provide an overview of the Move Update Census Data work paper. Next, Drew Mitchum will walk us through the Special Services work paper. During the presentations, questions can be sent to us in writing, and after each presentation, we will unmute the phone lines and provide participants with an opportunity to ask any remaining questions. Clifford Tell and Altaf Tafik are also available to answer questions related to the first-class mail and USPS marketing mail work papers. Now I'll turn it over to Jorge.
All right, thanks, David. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us. As David mentioned, I'll be walking us through the Move Update Census Data work paper. It'll follow pretty much the same information that's provided in the Census Data preface. The only difference is I'll be walking through an example as we progress through all of the tabs and into the output tab. Okay, so as mentioned in the preface, all of the data that's covered here covers the billing determinants hybrid year starting in quarter three FY16 and through quarter two FY17. We've got data from the Postal One system and from the Seamless Acceptance Service Performance System. So I'll start with the Merlin fee-paying mailings tab. This tab contains all of the mailings that during the hybrid year resulted in a payment due from the mailer as a result of the move update assessment. We mentioned in the preface that there are 934 mailings that had to pay a fee, and I'll be focusing on mailer one here in the top four rows of data and kind of walking through each of the tabs to show you how the numbers move along and into the output tab here. So you can see mailer one, it's got four mailings in the data set. One is first class, three are marketing mail. We've got total pieces, which is just the volume for each of the mailings. Cost impact is a system-generated calculation of what the actual assessment charge was. Collected is just a confirmation that these charges were collected from the mailer. And then we've got a field for the data set corresponding to the quarter for which the data was drawn, of course the class, and then a calculation for the number of pieces for which a fee was collected. As you can see, the other fields were system generated or given, and this had to be calculated. So the calculation was done by dividing the cost impact or the collected amount by the move update fee that was in effect at the time that the mailing occurred. I can draw your attention to the top rows here. We've got for each of the quarters the fee that was in effect for the past three quarters. It has been 7 cents per piece. For Q3 FY16, we had to calculate a time-weighted average fee price because of the exigent rollback that occurred April 10th of 2016. So it's a weighting of 9 days out of the 91 days in the quarter times the previous price of 7.3 cents per piece, and the 82 days out of the 91 during which it was only 7 cents per piece. And you can see as we move further to the right, another field here is just a confirmation, or it's a flag that lets us know that, you know, which one of these Maryland fee-paying mailings also occurred on the census data set with eligible volume. So now we're moving forward to the Merle Pay Mailing Census Data tab. This tab contains a listing of the mailings that were in the previous tab, the Maryland fee-paying mailing tab, a tab of data, but also had census-eligible volume during the hybrid year. As mentioned in the preface, this is a subset of the 934 mailings. It comes out to about 428 mailings, and the reason for the smaller number of mailings is due to the eligibility criteria and also the fact that the Merlin method uses sampling, et cetera. So there's just, you know, it doesn't cover the entire range of mailings. That being said, we've got mailer one here. You can see that the four mailings we observed in the Merlin data tab also occurred in the census data set. And just moving from left to right on the fields here, we've got the CRID, which is the mailer identifier, the mailing group ID, which is the identifier that's common within the two data sets, which is how we identified the mailings that occurred in both. Of course, the class, mailing size, this field is the move update eligible pieces as measured by the census system. The mailing date, which helps us to aggregate the monthly roll-up that's required under the proposed census system. The move update error count, the error percentage against which we compare the threshold that we're proposing, again, the mailing month, and the data set during which the mailing occurred. Now, moving over to the next tab, the Merle Pay Mailing Census Fee Calcs. So what we do in this tab is we draw from the prior tab where all the data is just a listing of the mailings and then the associated stats, and we for the purposes of measuring the threshold against which these mailers will be assessed and charged, we have to roll them up at per month per mailer and also establish the threshold based on the combined volume of first class and marketing mail. That's why you see in the third field there's a combined class, which is simply a sum of the volume for first class and marketing under each one of these mailers during each of the mailing months covered. And as we move through the fields here, we've got the number of mailings with eligible volume, total volume. The eligible volume is measured by census. The change of address errors, error percentage. And then we've got the piece threshold, which is calculated using the proposed 0.5% threshold and the eligible volume mailed by that mailer during the month. And then a calculation of the errors above threshold, which is simply the errors observed minus the piece threshold in the prior field. The fee assessment is calculated as the errors over threshold times the proposed census fee of 8 cents per piece. And then we've got the data set, the quarter during which the activity occurred. And then we've got three fields here, or four, that are used to allocate the calculated fee for that mailer for that month, which was done, again, at the combined overall level. We have to allocate those back to the class that incurred the fee, so to speak. So the approach we're taking is we are looking for a given mailer in a given month, looking at the proportion of total errors that was observed for first class in marketing, and using that to allocate whatever the resulting errors over threshold was for that month. And you see the first class mail assessed is here in this field. And to calculate the marketing mail pieces assessed, we simply take the total and subtract the first class assessed. And this is simply a field to check to make sure that the allocation always totals to 100% for each month for a given mailer. And you can see mailer one. We've got the month of November, three combined mailings with eligible volume. And you can just kind of walk through here to see what the observed volume was. The number of errors, you can see the pieces, the errors over the threshold resulting in a fee assessment of $5.92, of which 58.33% was allocated to first class mail, which results in 43 pieces charged for first class and the balance going to marketing. So moving on to the output tab, this is where we compare the performance under the Merling method to the census, performance under the census method for each of the mailers that that had Merlin fee-paying mailings and, of course, that had subsequent mailings that showed up under the census method. As you can see from mailer one here, we're showing total volume under Merlin, collected pieces under Merlin, the move update assessment fees collected, and the collected pieces. And then, of course, on the census method, we're showing eligible volume, assessed pieces, and the move update assessment fees charged. So the way we're rolling this up in the output tab is we're using conditional sums and conditional counts to refer back to all the input tabs, searching for the given mailer ID and the quarter on which it occurred, and summing up the relevant fields to roll it up to the mailer level. And then at the higher area here, it's the total overall tally of all the activity that we've got underneath, and we're also just summing all of the individual mailer totals to arrive at the overall, and then we're doing a look again, conditional sums and lookups into the input tabs to get the first class and marketing mail breakouts. And this is done for most of this tab with a couple of exceptions. For the census calculations, specifically the assessed pieces, there is a conditional sum to grab the first class mail assessed pieces that we saw in the prior tab, and then marketing mail just, again, takes the difference between the overall and what we've got for first class mail. And then on the far right, we've got the census move update assessment fees, and this is a calculation of the assessed pieces that we have on the left side here times the census proposed move update price of 8 cents per piece over threshold. And then the results from this spreadsheet were provided to the economists for first class and marketing mail to populate the cells and their billing determinants. As you can see here, these are the collected pieces under Merlin provided for first class, and these are the pieces under marketing. And then over here we've got the census assessed pieces, again, respectively for first class and for marketing mail. And that concludes the prepared statement that I've got. Can we open it up for questions?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen on the phone line, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one. Operator, are there any participants in queue at this time?
And there are no audio questions at this time.
You guys have a question?
So you've mentioned, this is Max Schneeman from the Commission. You mentioned that the one of the reasons for the differences between the Merlin and the census volume is the criteria for census eligibility. What are those criteria for mailings to be eligible for the census method?
Yeah, let's have, we're going to have Jason come up and answer that question.
This is Jason Flushing with MAPT. The difference is mostly related to all mailings and census have to be provided in an electronic documentation, so through mail.dat, Pulse Wizard, mail.xml, or IMSD. That's the biggest difference between why a mailing would be in Merlin and not in census. Merlin mailings can also, or Merlin sampling can also be run on hard copy statements. I think that was the question. If the question was about move update eligible pieces, that would be slightly different answer.
It was about census eligibility. Thank you.
And you can also, this is Karen Marcello speaking from the Law Department. On page 5 of our notice, we also describe the eligibility criteria for the new census method.
I'll take that. This is J.P. Klingenberg from the Postal Regulatory Commission as well. And this spreadsheet, the calculated number of census-eligible assessed pieces is based on the starting point of the Merlin sample volumes. So the question I'm asking is, are only Merlin sample pieces going to be eligible for the census update assessment moving forward, or will the universe of update assessed eligible pieces be larger than the Merlin universe? The Merlin sample, I apologize for that.
Cool. Yeah, that's it.
If the mail pieces are eligible for the census method, then
they will be eligible.
They would be assessed under the census method.
Okay.
Does that answer your question or no?
It does. It raises another question. I'm trying to figure out how to craft it as a what or how question instead of a why question.
Right. Yeah, I think,
I have to be careful here. It's going to take me a moment.
Okay.
If the proposed census method was in place last year, would only the Merlin volumes used as the starting point for this spreadsheet have been assessed through update compliance seats?
Right, and that gets to be a data question. I think this is heading in a direction where we're going to have to address it in writing.
I agree that this will have to be addressed in writing. I was just trying to get there as quickly as we can. So I guess if I could hit a different avenue, does the Postal Service have the, I heard you say that the SASC and Postal 1 for use for this, would the posters be able to query SAS data for previous quarters on universes other than just the Merlin sample, or would that just be...
Right, there is other data. We'd have to discuss in writing, how relevant that data is to this analysis.
I don't mean to interrupt, but could everyone speak up a little bit? Some people online are asking if that they can't hear. Thank you.
Do you want to rephrase that question, by chance?
Give me a minute to think if there's a better way to phrase it.
Just a general question. This is Natalie Ward from the Postal Regulatory Commission. So in order to be included in the census method, it has to have an IMB. That's the answer to that question, pretty much, right?
Yes.
And right now, Merlin samples pieces with and without IMBs, correct? Yes. Okay.
So this is Max Schneeman from the Commission. I'm going to attempt to rephrase JP's question. Going forward, the universe of move update assessment eligible pieces are those that are census eligible if they do not meet the move up, if they are beyond the move update error threshold.
So is there any difference between census eligible and move update eligible within census?
Right.
Could you be specific about that difference?
Sure. So there, what I was saying, I'm getting close to the phone. There is a difference between census eligible and move update eligible within census. So census eligible, as I said before, was things that are provided in EDOC with an IMB. Move update eligible is a subset of that within census, which is that if the submitter, owner, or preparer designated in the EDOC is a legal restraint mailer, then they are excluded from the move update eligible count, as well as if the piece was paid at a non-automation rate, including single piece, that would also be excluded from the move update eligible count.
Okay, J.P. Kleinberg again here from the Postal Regulatory Commission. I think I've figured out a way to ask my question. In the top left of the spreadsheet that's showing, cell maybe D11 has a volume number there. So that's the total volume of pieces that were sampled, the total number of pieces in Merlin sampled mailings that are eligible under the census system. Is that a fair reading of that cell?
Now that is the total volume in the Merlin sampled mailing that ultimately generated a move update assessment charge.
Okay. So the Merlin sampling universe is actually larger than that number. There were some mailings that were sampled that presumably did not pay
charge.
Any assessment fee.
Sure.
So that volume number is much smaller than the total eligible volume under both the new census and move update eligibility requirements.
It's a subset.
It's a subset. The Postal Service has not provided a number for that would be the universe under the new method. Are you aware of any volume number for the new universe of eligible volume? I should say the using the four quarters of available data, the number of pieces that would be eligible under both first class and marketing mail.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, we didn't. That goes beyond what.
Okay. Yeah, that's our
analysis was. So
okay.
Yeah, we'd have to address that in writing.
Have any additional questions come through the WebEx or no?
I don't see any.
All right. Then I'll hand it off to Drew Mitchell. He'll be going over the special services work papers.
Pass you the ball.
Okay, thank you. So hi everybody. Going to walk through the calculations on ACS, how we just determined what ACS was included. So all the work was started with the
Drew, we can't see your screen. Are you sharing it yet?
Hold on.
Okay.
I am not. Is that better?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. So the this is my starting point data that I was given. It breaks down the – gives me the amount of ACS notices that were paid for – during the first and second quarters of 2017 that were either first-class mail, they're broken down by shape and class, so it's first-class mail, flats, and letters, and marketing mail, flats, and letters. And then I'm going to go through the process of how I annualized that data and how I applied it to the adjusted, create the adjusted billing determinants. So the next section is the quarters one and quarter two for address correction service. The highlighted cells are the cells that are play a role in the adjustment. These are the electronic ACS notices on row 76 and row 91, and those are would be associated with flats. And then the automated lines 78, 79, and 93 and 94, those are the letters that will be where the volume was that would be made free. So what I took is for the first two quarters, I calculated the, sorry, let me show these two cells. I just took the volumes that are above that are automated. So there were letters, and then what percentage of all automated first-class mail or all automated USPS marketing mail would be that share? Those the volume that we identified, I was provided what share that is of those volumes, and then the next section calculates what the just brings in the overall the amount that will actually be adjusted. So it just applies the 49% in case of first-class mail, 49% of all notices, all first-class mail automated notices that were the first or second notice. That was 10 million and some change, and then 49% of the additional notices, which is 817,607. Same thing was done for USPS marketing mail, except those 20% were applied. Then for the electronic ACS, the shares are much significantly smaller because it only applies to flats. So it was 0.2% of all FCM electronic would be free, and 1.4% of all USPS marketing mail electronic would be free. And that was multiplied times, once again, times the volumes from the four quarters billing terminants for 88,000 pieces of first-class mail and 216,000 pieces of marketing mail. The next portion is just subtracting those out, so it's just the numbers from above that are bold subtracted from the total at the very top of the billing terminants, and then this table here, this section down here, the adjusted billing terminants, is applied to the CapCalc file, and it just shows where they go. The amount that are free are identified here for the flats and here for the letters. And it's just simple math from there, just multiplying times the price and then times the price of zero. And that's it. So if anybody has any questions, I'll be happy to take them.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then one on your touchtone telephone. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star, then one.
And there's an audio question from the line of Chris Stone.
Pardon me, your line's open. Please go ahead and ask your question. If you have your phone on mute, can you unmute your phone, please?
Chris, your line is open.
My question is relating to the prior discussion on legal restraint not being included. How is that done technically? Is that the use of the mailer identification numbers, or how is that approached?
In the census method, it uses, however, the owner, preparer, and submitter are defined in EDOC, so submitter is always defined by a CRID. Owner and preparer can be a CRID, a MID, or a permit, or a pub number. And then all of those are rolled up to the CRID that they're associated to, and then it's compared to a list of legal restraint CRIDs.
Thank you.
That was the next question.
Okay.
And there are no further audio questions.
All right, J.P. Klingenberg from the Postal Regulatory Commission. Drew, could you take me through cells D-126 and D-127 in a little more detail?
D-126 and D-127? Sure. So it's the – it took the volume provided in the tables up here and divided it by the total volumes for the relative parts. So for first-class mail flats – So it's the volume of letters divided by the total volume of first-class mail transactions, the sum of the two, which came up to 49%. So you can see it's a C59. So total volume that was charged that would be free, divided by the sum of D80 and L80. So D80 is the D and L are the total volume of transactions that were automated.
So that table that appears to start with D57 or so, maybe
yes.
56, that's the hard coded data. Can you take me through that source?
That would be JSON.
There's a table here of ACS notices that would have been provided at no charge.
Right.
A move update proposal. That's kind of the hard-coded data that underlies this spreadsheet, and I was just wondering what the source of that hard-coded data was.
It came from two different sources.
Sorry.
The data came from two different sources. It came from both SASP and NCSC address management.
So could you take me through, like, how that data was created or what process or what queries were used or anything like that?
The two sources were based on what type of SID was used on the piece. And originally all of the data was pulled from SASP using for both one code and full service ACS requested SIDs. And the number of pieces that qualify for free residual, which would be greater than or equal to, the submitter has to be greater than or equal to 95% full service, as well as provide valid 5-4 in the EDOC for those pieces. For one code, the pieces were used straight from SASP for full service, it was then bounced against NTSC to see who actually subscribed for those pieces using the MIDs on each piece. So we rolled everything up to the MID level, and then they used that to look up the list of MIDs that actually subscribed for ACS notifications, and then if the subset for that was used.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you very much. Drew, that was the only question we had for you, I think.
Okay.
Yes, are there other questions just generally on the phone? Oh, yeah.
I had a general question about standard mail.
Marketing mail.
Marketing.
TIFF. No,
really the
marketing mail.
Yes, marketing mail.
Please don't change first.
I was just verifying the move-up date numbers with the billing determinant, and you all filed quarter one and quarter two FY17 updates. And those numbers match exactly, but the quarter three and quarter four 16 are off by a couple.
Right.
Is there a reason that they're going to be updated to billing determinants or?
Yes, we'll file the updated billing determinants because we did not want to open up the ACR docket, so we did not file the changes. Now that we have been asked the CHI question, we'll provide the updated files and provide all the links that you guys want.
Okay.
That was sort of, I think we were uncertain when we got to quarters three and four. We thought, well, do we really need to open the ACR docket? The CHR question refers to the periodic.
Yeah, I haven't asked this question
yet.
Right. One more clarification. We will be actually in the question, CHR question, we have been asked to look at the periodic reports billing terminals.
Right.
We would not be doing that. We'd actually be using the ACR billing terminals, which are different from the periodic reports.
Yes.
So I think both Cliff and I would be actually using the ACR billing terminals. And in my case, I'll be updating those files and then linking them to the, giving all the links that you guys want.
All right.
So, yeah, I think so now we're persuaded to file changes to the ACR docket to get these because, and we'll try to do that Monday.
All right, cut off. So are you expecting SDHIR to ask for those updates, or?
No.
We're doing them in response to the one you've already asked.
We would do the updates.
Okay.
Yeah, we got that.
Right, in order, we're going to try to link with the
new
numbers.
Okay. That was mainly for for USPS marketing now.
Do we have linking questions that we want to?
No, that was the question, was linking it to the ACR files rather than the periodic report files.
Right.
Because the commission question actually refers to the dates that are given in the footnote.
Right.
Refer to the periodic reports, and we would actually be linking it to the ACR files.
Yeah.
And so will we copy the billing determinants into the work papers, or?
No, actually, we read the question one more time, and essentially, let me sort of clarify what we plan to do. We'll provide a consolidated file for the hybrid year, that'd be one file, and that file would be linked to either the CapCal, or in my case, it would be linked to the VD adjustment file and to the CapCal file.
Okay. So we'll add a workbook to the work paper.
We'll add one more workbook, and the other two workbooks, in my case, would be linked to the original workbook that we can recreate.
Well, as I understood the question, they wanted the consolidated version to also be linked to the actual final billing determinants.
Yes.
So we're going to have to pull those into the folder and link everything together. And it'll be
one
linking party. A lot of links.
Are there any other questions in the room? We did have an ACS question submitted via text come in. Okay, let's turn to that question. The question is, some manual ACS transactions come from IMB mail. Is there a trend towards a reduction in the manual transactions and an increase in the automated transactions? Jason or Kay? Kay Fisher, are you on the line?
Yes, I am on the line.
Did you hear the question?
I did. I don't have any specific statistics to that, but we do know that since the onset of full service ACS and one code ACS prior to that, that there has been an increase in electronic notifications for those that request ACS. I don't have any numbers available in front of me.
Are there any other questions?
There are no audio questions.
I think we're that concludes the conference then.
Well, Saeed has a few.
Yeah. No, I know.
Okay. Thank you again, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us. This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect, and a replay will be available on the USPS.com website. Thank you.